Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Managing Director of Elcott Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And it's my pleasure to have with us today Sarah Barnes-Humphrey and Eric Johnston on a conversation on startups and new technologies in supply chain. Sarah is a logistician turned supply chain marketeer, passionate about bringing stories to life in the industry. She's the host of the popular Let's Talk Supply Chain podcast. She also hosts the Trade Squad show on YouTube. And she basically helps tell the stories and bring awareness to brands and hot topics in the industry, which also includes the famous Women in Supply Chain series. She's the co-founder and CEO of ShipZ, which is a new technology platform which encompasses all her experience and knowledge in supply chain, bringing innovative and collaborative ideas together on a platform for the supply chain industry. Eric comes from the Journal of Commerce, JOC, is a senior editor there for technology, and he leads the coverage and analysis of the technology's impact on global logistics and trade. He regularly reports on how shippers, carriers across all modes and logistics companies use software, as well as on concepts impacting core freight transportation processes like procurement, execution, visibility, and payment. Eric is a regular presenter and moderator at industry events and webinars, and prior to joining JOC, he spent almost 13 years with American Shipper in a variety of roles. Eric, Sarah, thanks for joining us and a pleasure to have you with us today.
Really happy to be here. Thanks so much for having us, Radu.
Yeah, great to be here, Radu.
Super. And let's start maybe with Eric first. And I wanted to ask you, given the current situation, and we live quite interesting and, for lack of a better word, turbulent times about the COVID-19 situation, the coronavirus crisis, it's turning a little bit supply chains upside down. And obviously, it's also having an impact on the capital and on the funding of venture capital funds towards logistics supply chain startups. So I was reading that Sequoia Capital basically put out an official announcement recently saying that this is going to be a fairly tough year. I wanted to ask you, how do you see this situation affecting startups in general?
Yeah, it's kind of the million-dollar question at this point as it relates to startups and either, you know, VCs that are logistics or supply chain focused, or, you know, more general funds that, you know, had an interest in logistics. I think, you know, from everything I've read and in talking to a couple VCs that I sort of implicitly trust at this point, I think what we're seeing right now is funds are going to get a little more choosy around which companies they invest in. If you are already down the road with a fund, you're probably, you know, in relatively good shape if you have a good story to tell and they were going to back you anyway. It might be a little difficult to start a conversation right now, especially if you're kind of in unproven territory and having to really, you know, go out there and raise in an environment where either you as a founder are not, you know, really kind of known and have a track record, or, you know, the market that you're trying to address is not massive and sort of sells itself. I think, and we can maybe get into this a little bit later, around kind of which business models are more preferable now and how that maybe has changed even independent of the COVID situation. But, you know, I mean, I think big picture economically, whether you're talking about the VC industry or whether you're talking about, you know, a company being able to invest in a piece of software, everybody's going to be taking a hard look at every last dollar right now because sales are down. You know, we don't know when that bounce back is going to come. We're in a really, really unclear situation on both the demand and supply side. So it's not necessarily a time when, you know, the funds are loose. But on the other hand, I've definitely read about some funds that are saying, you know, this is the time when real huge winners are kind of sometimes emerge. You know, we saw out of the dot-com and out of the financial crisis, we saw some big household names come up that, you know, kind of rose at like Phoenix out of the fire. So it's not an all or nothing situation, but I think in general, it's going to be a really difficult situation to try to like prove yourself if you're kind of unproven to this point.
And specifically on the topic of software, and basically there's a lot of talk now in this situation where all of a sudden supply chains were kind of blown in the air, and the there's been literally issues everywhere because of the lockdowns and different breakdowns in the supply chain. How do you see software visibility tools, visibility startups, all those type of offerings and services, whilst companies may not necessarily want to roll it out now, nevertheless, it may, in my amateur view, it may a little bit accelerate that process because it does give them a lot of, a lot of insight or data to make better decisions potentially in the future. Do you see that as a potential consequence of this crisis, or how do you see this visibility and traceability side?
Yeah, I think what you're going to see in the postmortem of this crisis from a supply chain perspective is you're going to see a million case studies, highlighted by, companies that either sell themselves as risk management or mitigation tools or supply chain visibility tools. Anything that helps you pivot quickly from kind of one course to another. People are going to sell themselves saying, look what you might have been able to do had you had the foresight, had you had this in place prior to this crisis. I think you're absolutely right. It's really difficult to expect any, shipper, any 3PL to implement some kind of transformational technology in the midst of all this. And I would suspect, I haven't had a chance yet to talk to a lot of companies to kind of see where they are. Whether projects are on hold or have been put on hold due to this, but I can't imagine that many people have the bandwidth to kind of, go forward with a big project, big rollout of some new technology in the midst of all this. So I would imagine a lot of projects are on hold, and I would bet a lot of money that coming out of this, when things return to some sort of normal, that you're going to see a lot of kind of, well, if you had our technology in place prior to, January of 2020, you would have been able to make, you would have been able to minimize your damages, and you would have been able to preserve revenue out of this market or from this product. So absolutely. I mean, this is sort of like a tailor-made case for those types of hindsight is 2020 cases, really.
Can I just jump in there for a sec? I also think that, innovators in and of itself are going to take a look at, what's happening right now, and they're going to be able to come up with new innovative ideas, software, cloud platforms to maybe, reduce some of the risk and the pandemic that's come from something like this as well.
I was going to say, I think, a point that I had made to someone last week was I tend to look at things very much through kind of first and foremost through an ocean freight lens. And if you go back 15, 16 years ago in North America, you had some really crippling situations in ports in North America, and especially in LA and Long Beach. And what shippers, importers into the US did post that crisis was they said, well, we need to diversify. We can't have all of our cargo going through one gateway.
Right.
But slowly they started concentrating things back again until it happened again about a decade later. That was in 2014. Now you don't find an importer who doesn't have a very diversified strategy about getting cargo into the US. And so I think this type of major, major disruption is going to make people think about diversifying their sourcing, which is not easy. Sometimes if you have a specialized component in, that you've spent years creating a supplier relationship around in one particular country where there's like a favorable duty treatment, it's not easy to replicate that. But I think you are going to see companies take a hard look at diversifying, and any technology that helps them do that is going to be really well received.
I wanted to share a little bit on a discussion that I had with one of our, he's actually a software and ERP provider, and he was telling me exactly to your point, Eric, that most of the projects are now on hold. At the same time, I was talking to a different type of a visibility tool software provider, and it's a different problem that that they had. Namely, their rollout takes between 2 to 6 weeks. So he was coming from an angle of, now we really need to accelerate our sales and get in. There's different modules and there's different complexity, of course, right? So for the least complexity of the module, it would take about 2 to 3 weeks to implement it. Now, but his issue was that because clients are used to brand names like SAP or Oracle or whatnot that take sometimes months or years to successfully roll out, they almost cannot believe that there are solutions that would give them that type of data and visibility that are available so fast. Right. So it's kind of a conundrum on the other side that was the solution. Some of the solutions are already available. People either don't trust that it actually, you know, sometimes to the point where they think it's a scam. And secondly, again, obviously in crisis mode, you don't necessarily want to, you know, to risk another failed implementation. So, we'll see how that pans out, but definitely there's a lot of solutions that can be quite readily and fast deployed if necessary and if companies were open to it. And I wanted to kind of shift also and ask both of you, because now it's also a time of collaboration and working together. And I'll shift a little bit to a question that I had a little bit later on, but I think it's applicable to ask you now. And we've seen that spot on with what happened at TPM, right? In terms of the conference, the fact that you've done an online event because it wasn't possible to do a physical event. How do you see also this situation getting people together, getting organizations working together for greater added value to their clients by data sharing, alliances, and so on?
You know, I'm gonna let Sarah answer that first, because I know collaboration is probably the thing I hear the most from her. So I can jump in after, but yeah, it's a great question.
Yeah, I was going to jump in because you said my favorite word, Radu. I mean, collaboration. I don't know if people cringe every time they hear it now because I say it so much. But I really think that collaboration is the future of business. And like we saw after, you know, UnTPM is what people have been calling it, and the emergence of that one-day webinar that we were all really able to come together. Kudos to the team at chain.io for putting that together, because, you know, everybody was going to TPM to listen to the content, listen to the speakers, especially, you know, El Dorado, which was Eric's baby, and brought together the tech community. And so I think this is a really great example of people coming together and collaborate. And it's just going to get that much more important as we, you know, move forward, especially in the tech side. You know, one example that I haven't seen yet is companies that solve challenges in different aspects of the supply chain coming together in collaboration to make it easier for supply chain professionals to find what they need without a lot of logins. That's a challenge that I think that we're facing as supply chain. Do you think that, I'm going to pose this right back to you guys, do you think that that can happen?
Well, I would say that one of the interesting things in putting together a couple events over the last 2 years around, you know, purely logistics technology, not convening people around, you know, global logistics and then having a little bit of programming around technology, but actually building an entire event around the idea of technology, is I've been sort of floored by the level of kind of partnership and coopetition that you see.
I love that word.
It always sounded a little bit kind of, you know, like something you'd see in a management book, but there's no real better word to describe what's going on right now, where you have companies in 5-10 years ago would have not taken phone calls from one another and been, you know, talking crap about each other to their competitors. And maybe they still do, but they are literally finding ways to work together. And I think there's two reasons for it. One is the demand side. There's too much need for one company to solve all the problems of a particular shipment in transit. There's just too much. I mean, companies have tried to do it. Single companies have tried to do it. Inevitably, they always need to buy, you know, piece of data X, partner with, you know, provider ABC, you know, have a strategic partnership with this company that fills a hole that their customers ask for. So now, instead of that approach, it's like, well, let's, you know, these three, four companies, let's work together and provide greater value than we would, you know, as the sum of our parts. And then I think the second part of it is the structural part of of software now, it's just easier to pull things together with APIs, with, you know, kind of, you know, Sarah mentioned cloud, and everything being hosted remotely cuts down on software companies' costs to kind of produce their product, so they can throw more into engineering and throw more into integrations and interfaces with both their customers, but also with other software. So, you know, Radu, your point about companies that can implement in 2 to 3 weeks surprising kind of consumers is well taken, because it does seem crazy to someone who might have last gone through a big software implementation 15 years ago, and yeah, it did take 3 years and it was a nightmare. But what's behind all this is that software that's really easy to connect with one another. It's not easy. I can't do it, but it's way easier. It's way easier to be done. People like Brian at Chain.io, they're, you know, your EDI, these companies that really kind of, they kind of provide like the tools that connect two different systems together. It changes the whole kind of approach. You don't have to be the be all end all as a single software company to every customer. You have this kind of like toolkit that you can piece together different companies, different sources of data. So I think I'm right there with Sarah in thinking this is absolutely the future. And if it's, if not the present, and it's really about, is the ultimate consumer of the technology, are they going to be with that model, or are they going to expect to still have one box and one, you know, kind of platform and one throat to choke, to use a very trite phrase?
I guess from a consumer perspective, it's ultimately, you know, how we live our lives on a daily basis and why Amazon is so successful, right? Because it's one point of, or Alibaba, it's one point where you can get all your stuff. So, I mean, from an ease of utilization, as long as it's easy to use, that's probably what the consumer wants. I wanted to bring the example, and I'll ask you both maybe for some concrete examples if you have seen as well, but I wanted to specifically point out in this aspect of collaboration, and I will personally say that I was skeptic at the beginning, and actually I had them on the podcast about a year and a half ago, TradeLens. I had IBM and I had Maersk. They first started the platform, right? And about a year and a half, when they were sharing that basically they wanted to get all the carriers and a number of other players from the, you know, customs and government and all of that, 3PLs on the platform, I kind of asked them, hey, are you sure this is even possible? Are you sure they will want to share their data with you? And well, now fast forward 1.5 years later, it seems that it really is catching on. I think they got most of the carriers now on board. On top of Maersk, there's their competition or frenemies. There's another term, right? So you have your term, I have the term frenemies. So I think TradeLens can be also a pretty good example of collaborating, working together and creating this platform for the, I don't know, greater good and ease of the industry. And I wanted to ask you, do you have some specific example? Because I'd love to, you know, maybe to give some very specific case studies, if you have, maybe from US, maybe from other parts of the world, where you've seen also startups coming together, or startup with big companies coming together, or anything like that to this point of collaboration.
Well, so for me, when I was starting to build ShipZ, it's not necessarily a concrete example, but it's something that, you know, I kind of see as the future of the company. And that would be, and that's really a part of all of the conversations that I'm having around ShipZ when I am talking about other tech companies in supply chain, other software companies in supply chain. I'm thinking about the future and how we can work together, because they're solving different aspects of the supply chain. I'm solving different aspects of the supply chain, and how do we bring that together? And that's actually phase two of what we're going to be working on at ShipZ. Because I think that, you know, if, like you said, if we can bring it together into one point that makes it easy for everybody and easy for them to see what supply chain companies are out there and what they do for their size of company or for their product or for the aspect of the supply chain that they're having a challenge with at the time, I think that we're going to see a lot more success throughout the industry if we all are able to, you know, come together in that collaboration.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm always a little hesitant to name specific examples.
I just realized I put you on the spot. Yeah.
It's fine. It's good. I'm usually in the position where I'm putting other people on the spot, so it's totally fair. I cover a huge range of companies and a lot of competing companies, and obviously there are a lot of interesting models out there. And to your specific question, I have seen some specific intersection of startups with established providers. I can give a couple examples because I've written about this a lot. In the domestic freight landscape in North America, you've seen a lot of the big name TMS providers partner with both some of the startup visibility providers and also with some of the kind of well-known, well-backed, venture capital-backed freight brokers. So the domestic freight forwarders. And it's been interesting to see the level of partnership between the two of them and how much it's been publicized. So it's not been some sort of integration that takes place behind the scenes that, you know, the companies tell their existing customers about in an email that just goes out to customers. They've been front and center in press releases. There's been big public blogs on LinkedIn and on their websites about it. They've made sure that I know about them. And, you know, rather than any individual partnership, kind of collectively, it's showing that, you know, TMS providers have the inbuilt network of demand from shippers or brokers, if that's what they're, you know, their core customer is, and these startups need access to those companies. Those startups need demand to fuel their connections that they may have to the carrier side, or vice versa. Maybe they have a huge network of carriers, and I'm sorry, maybe they have a huge network of shippers, and they need some sort of TMS that connects them to a network of carriers, of trucking companies. So what you're seeing, and this goes to what I was saying before, is you're seeing these startups kind of come in and say, well, you know, this is the market as I thought it was. This is what the product we're going to try to build. And very quickly they realize, well, we're missing this piece. And maybe this piece is demand side. And we just, you know, it's hard for us. The money that we would spend to create that demand side is so intensive, I should say. Why don't we just create partnerships with TMS providers who have that demand side built in and make a big deal of it? You know, and so that's been one area that I've seen a lot of activity, where you've seen kind of these big incumbent companies working with some of the startups. That's notable. You know, to your point about TradeLens, they've definitely made a lot of progress over the last year in terms of getting a lot of rival carriers, Maersk's rival carriers. They've gotten a ton of port authorities, terminal operators, customs authorities. They actually just signed up today. I just saw a note that they signed up Standard Chartered, which is an interesting kind of partner, because I've been reporting a lot on kind of how trade finance is becoming a bigger kind of ancillary service to logistics. And that kind of, it'll be interesting to see what Standard Chartered wants to get out of their participation. But you know, the missing piece is similar to what I was just talking about, at least to date, is the shipper side, the demand side of that. And I know that Maersk has told us that they have shippers who are involved in this, but they aren't, you know, don't necessarily want to be named at this point. So I think until we see a lot of shippers kind of jumping in on this and a lot of freight forwarders being involved in TradeLens, there's always going to be that ultimate skepticism on the demand side.
Well, and I want to jump in there on TradeLens, because I think from a 3PL side, I think they might have some challenges there as well, right? Because the carriers are already on the 3PL side. And so it would be interesting to see if they're going to be able to get 3PLs on board with this. And then the other thing that I wanted to just jump in there with is there's also accelerator programs like Plug and Play that are bringing some of the, you know, exactly what Eric said, bringing some of the larger brands that are looking to innovate in certain areas of their business. And those accelerator programs are bringing those large enterprise companies with startups that have innovative ideas, platforms that are going to literally plug and play into what they're already doing from a tech and a software side. And so they're not, you know, taking on that project of proprietary technology. They're, you know, looking at startups for that innovative idea that they can bring into the fold.
Yeah, Plug and Play is a great. Mike Zhang came on the podcast a few episodes ago. They're great way of doing things. Unilever has also from a corporate perspective, it's an interesting model. I don't know if you guys know that there's Unilever Foundry, where they basically support directly by themselves a number of startups, and then they integrate them in their business unit called Unilever International, which is kind of their play field for before they launched it into the bigger arm of Unilever. So it's it's all sorts of models around those areas.
The merits of the independent accelerator or fund versus corporate accelerator fund is like a whole hour long podcast unto itself. I'm sure.
Yeah, let's not go into that, but let's go to another $1 million question, which is profitability. Profitability of all these startups and these new exciting ventures. I think there's been quite a bit of discussions, especially because we've had the WeWork situation, yeah, where it didn't quite pan out the way maybe many have hoped, or, you know, maybe some of the, in retrospect, everybody can say they knew it, right? So they sure. You can always be very wise when you look backwards. But the fact of the matter is that I think there's a lot more investors now that are very getting much more impatient, or they want results faster. They want their startups to have a clear path to profitability. And usually in supply chain, in logistics, you need fairly long investments and you need fairly long cycles before that is achieved. Have you seen any shift? Have you seen any the discussions maybe also shifting, Eric, Sarah? What's your take on this specific topic?
Yeah, I can sort of jump in first, Sarah. So two things I'd point out. One is you mentioned kind of the cycles in logistics, and this is something that I sort of bring up on almost every conversation I have with VCs, whether, you know, in a public forum or you know, in phone calls that are off the record or on background, is, you know, does the VC community now understand what a typical logistics software sales cycle looks like? Because it's not, you know, even though you have stuff that can be deployed in 2 to 3 weeks, the decision around that is typically not a quick decision. It can be, you know, 8 months, 12 months, 24 months, 5 years, right? I mean, it really can be a long, long cycle for some of these things. And how does that align with a VC that is expecting X% growth in revenue over the next 12 to 18 months, you know, leading into another round where the company is valued up higher? So, you know, are VCs kind of more aware that that's sort of how, like, a company could be successful, but they just take more time to be successful because of the nature of the product they're selling? Probably. I think in general, I think just the aptitude around the industry has grown a lot over the last 5 to 10 years. It's, you know, I don't think that VCs are all of a sudden going to say, well, we're fine. We want a company to prioritize profitability over the next year over hyper growth. No, I mean, that's not what a VC is investing in. A VC is investing in the chance that this may be a huge home run and not, you know, a decent sized business, right? So there's also some misalignment there, and it leads me to think, like, maybe every software company in logistics isn't suited to raise VC funding. You know, maybe some of them ought to be looking at other forms of capital to bolster their company, right? So, you know, a lot of it depends on if, are you a brokerage where there's tons of revenue, or a freight forwarder where potentially you have lots of revenue, but most of it is passed through, but is the VC kind of aware that that top line growth isn't necessarily indicative of how successful the company is in eventually becoming profitable? Or they SaaS where the sales cycle is longer, but you know, the recurring revenue is stronger and the margin is stronger. So it just, I think it depends more on who the VC is as much as it does the, you know, the business model. Like, do they understand what this business is trying to achieve and where, and how long it might take them for them to achieve it?
Yeah, those are really great points, Eric. But I also want to point out that I think marketing is going to play a really big role in that as well. You know, rolling out the story of the company. I mean, we all know there's a lot of technology companies out there, especially in supply chain, and it's growing every single day. You know, so how are you going to differentiate yourself to make sure that that sales cycle actually comes down? Right? So it doesn't take as long to onboard a customer. It doesn't take as long to be profitable. And I think marketing is going to be key to that.
Oh, big time. But you know, Sarah, you've probably heard at our events where shippers get up and say, we had a shipper at our LogTech event in Vegas get up and say, I get 160 cold calls a week, right? Like, how do you, if you're running a global supply chain, how do you manage sorting through 160 cold emails from 3PLs and software companies each
you
week.
Don't.
Saying,
you
we
don't.
We do this, we do that, right?
Like, it's absolutely impossible. And that's why I'm saying, you know, part of that key and the key to the success of this is going to be in your marketing and how you get your story out there. Because you have to be able to differentiate yourself, not in a phone call, but in a different way, either through thought leadership pieces, being on a panel at conferences, really getting to know that person, the networking in person, I mean, is huge. But also, podcast. Sorry?
Being on Radu's podcast.
Yeah, or mine.
Yeah,
you know, and picking different content mediums to be able to get it out there, because not everybody's the same. Some shippers are really active on Twitter. Some are really active on LinkedIn. Some really watch videos very closely. Some listen to content through, you know, the podcasts, apps or Audible or different things like that, where that's where they're getting their information. And I think that's really going to be key to the success of a technology company differentiating themselves, getting themselves in front of customers, you know, even through vetted communities now, right? Like, there's a lot of different options, but it's a matter of, even when you do get onto those mediums and you do tell your story, what are you saying? Are you keeping it simple? Are you painting the picture as to, you know, what it is that you do and specifically how you can help a company? Because if you're not doing that, then they don't have time to sit through that and sift through what you're saying to try to figure out whether your technology is what they're looking for.
Great point, sir. I'll add some of my experience at least with these things, because I mean, and I'm not even a client, but I I do myself get pitched a lot, you know, a lot of people approach me for some reason. They think that I might be able to either advise them or buy their software. I don't know what, but at some point it gets overly crowded. They're like, okay, I mean, but what exactly do you do and what sets you apart? And what is in a way exciting to see is that people are getting on the bandwagon slowly. It's happening slowly, but are getting on the bandwagon with, okay, we need to add value. This kind of diehard sales pitch, cold calling type of activities are kind of dead. I mean, I don't think anybody will sell stuff because they, you know, they cold call the head of supply chain and that person picked up and then there was open to talk about that particular software piece or whatever it may be that they were selling. It's mostly done because you put out the content, they met at the conference, you said something of value to them, which typically is not a direct sales pitch. It's more of a story, a case study of how did I help somebody else, type of a example, and then you gauge their, then you get their interest, and then they ask you for more. I think we're seeing slowly but surely we're seeing startups as well as corporates. I think corporates are even slower than startups, but we're seeing them start to do that. Yeah, I think it's gonna take a while. So if you open up LinkedIn now, I think there's a few that, you know, that actually put out thought leadership. They put out reports. They try to do this type of activities. But also, I think it's there's a long way to go in the journey.
Yeah, well, and I also think that it takes time, right? As to Eric's point and to your point just now, you know, there's a lot of touch points between meeting them and actually getting the sale, right? And marketing takes a long time as well. You know, you've got to be consistent in that messaging. You've got to be giving value after value after value after value, and then be asking for the sale as well.
Mm. Yep. And specifically on the point of, because since there's the business that I'm supposed to be in, which is the human resources side, headhunting and recruitment side, I wanted also to ask you both, and this also links very much to the branding and the storytelling of the company. How do you attract the best talent? And especially if you're a startup or you're a younger player, you don't have the same funds or the same brand like an established player sometimes. So maybe if you can share your perspectives on how can startups and younger organizations make themselves more attractive as employers of choice and win this fight for talent.
Well, I can't believe you're asking us that question. You came on the Trade Squad a couple of months ago, and we talked about how storytelling is a huge component to hiring talent.
But it's weird. It's weird for me to quote myself, right? So I need to answer.
Well, I'm going to quote you for you. And you know what? I absolutely agreed with you when you said that. And it was a really compelling, you know, argument to let companies know that not only are you storytelling for the brand itself, but you're also storytelling about the culture and the people and the leadership and the mindset to be able to attract that talent. I think that, you know, the approach to hiring talent really depends on each entity. Because, you know, enterprise or traditional companies versus startups, they both have their upside, they both have their downside. And so it also depends on the individuals, you know, what kind of company they want to work for as well. But I think the key really to attracting the talent is in that storytelling. And so when you're looking at marketing the company, you've got to think about who you're marketing to. Of course, you're marketing to your core customer, but then you're also storytelling and marketing to the next wave of talent that you want to bring into your organization.
I can, you know, give a few thoughts in terms of conversations that I've had with people who have been weighing, you know, offers, they've had offers on the table from startups and offers on the table from incumbents. And I think there's sort of this general idea that, you know, a certain person is drawn to the challenge of being at a startup. There's young energy. There's fewer layers of bureaucracy. There's more direct opportunity to, you know, influence the direction of the company. There's potentially a lot more upside to the, you know, compensation. And then, you know, the flip side of that is stability and, you know, name brand, and you're kind of walking into something that has a good foundation and you're just trying to sort of incrementally improve it. And I think there's this idea that, like, some people are drawn to one and other people are drawn to another. And I think that's part of it. What I've seen people kind of gravitate toward one or the other is the person, it's more like the person that they feel like they're going to be working with, or the team that they feel like they're going to be working with, or the person that they report to, seems to make as big a difference as anything else. I think people in logistics tend to move a fair amount. They tend to be risk takers. You know, I've certainly met a ton of people who've lived in some pretty far flung places in their careers. So it's not about taking the easy path ever, even if they're working for a name brand company. So I think if you're a startup, I think one thing you're realizing really early on is A, you're competing in a really competitive market within logistics and supply chain. And then you as a startup, you're also probably competing against other sort of technology focused industries that have a bunch of gravitational pull themselves. So if, you know, if you're in engineering, you know, you as a logistics startup are competing for engineers across a million different industries that all need good engineers right now, or good programs.
Absolutely.
Right? So yeah. it's there's these dimensions that startups have to face. And really it's like, I think if you, obviously people who are, I think, drawn to startups have this feeling that they want big problems and big challenges to tackle. But you also, you can't, I don't think you can go in and say, you know, we're going to give you, with this make, crash spectacularly, or we may make it to the moon. I think you have to provide people a little bit more of a kind of a stable roadmap for what you plan to do. Just because there's too many good opportunities at incumbent companies that are on the table as well.
Hmm. Yeah. Communication is key there.
Super. Well, on this note, I want to thank both for your time. Sarah, Eric, thanks for joining us. Stay safe in this time. Stay healthy. And let's see what the next couple of months will bring. But for sure, it's going to be very interesting.
Thank you, Radu. Appreciate having me on.
Thanks, Radu. Yeah, podcasts are great. I'm not allowed to travel very far anymore, so these are great. I really appreciated the chance to chat. I've listened to your podcast for a long time, so it's great to be a part of it.
Super.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.